From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. If you go to a Taylor Mac show, you should be ready to be part of the act. Mac believes being in the audience isn't supposed to be a passive experience. He wants people using their bodies, so they move around, sometimes dance. Same thing for performance artist Nigel Smith. He uses sketches and games in some of his work to explore issues and ask tough questions. And then there's the choreographer Bill T. Jones, who traveled around the country talking to people to get inspiration for a show. All three were in town this week. The University of Utah College of Fine Arts helped us gather them on stage last night at Kingsbury Hall. And we talked about, a lot of things. The role of the artist in transitional moments like this was one thing. Can you make art and not be an activist? We're broadcasting the conversation today after the news.
Support for Radio West comes from thousands of sustainers, listeners just like you who give ongoing monthly donations to help pay for the public radio shows they rely on. Show your love for Radio West by becoming a sustainer, starting at just $5 a month at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The great choreographer and dancer Bill T. Jones has said, "You build a foundation for a performance with questions. How do I express the feelings I have right now?" is one. Who's this for? Is another. How are we going to crack open another way of doing it? And of course, there's this question. Who are you going to work with? All of our guests tonight have used the audience or civilians to make their work. Jones said the profoundest questions that he can ask can be answered with other people, not in the dance world. The director and artist, Nigel Smith, has used volunteer participants to shape the structure of his own performances. And if you were here on Saturday night, you saw how the playwright and performer, Taylor Mack, made the audience a critical part of the show. Mack's performance uses what he's called the full range of the audience's ability to take in art. And he's noticed that people in this culture have started separating themselves. We've started isolating ourselves. So he makes them perform these public rituals with him. All of our guests tonight have these expectations for you, the audience, because they don't see it as a passive experience. But here's the question. What are they hoping for exactly, besides giving people a deeply emotional experience? Do they want to change you? Do they want to make you act? Make you see the world differently? We'll see. Nigel Smith is with us. He's the artistic director of The Flea. It's a theater group based in New York City. He's also associate artistic director of the group Elastic City, and he's ringleader, that's what they call it, of the activist group Willing Participant. Nigel has directed Taylor Mack's works here and the 24-decade history of popular music. He's also been the associate director of Bill T. Jones' musical, Fela. Please welcome Nigel Smith. Taylor Mack is the author of 17 full-length plays and performance pieces. Mack's preferred pronoun is Judy. And this past Saturday, as I mentioned, Judy performed a section of a 24-decade history of popular music. Mack is also a current Guggenheim Fellow. Welcome, Taylor Mack. And, of course, Bill T. Jones is with us tonight. He received the National Medal of Arts in 2013, was named a MacArthur Genius Fellow in 1994. He's won 2 Tony Awards. He's choreographed more than 120 works. He's artistic director and co-founder of the Bill T. Jones Arnie Zane Company and artistic director of the New York Live Arts. Please welcome Bill T. Jones. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hi.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, part of what we may be talking about some, it kind of depends on you, is how you see that relationship between art and activism. So I get that you're artists. Are you also activists?
Dun, dun, dun.
Everyone, what are you guys deferring to Bill? Bill, you start.
Because I'm actually, the one today that in the conversation who said that I hadn't really thought it was most useful to talk about it as activism, but to maybe take another route and say that art making is always negotiating the distance between the deeply personal and the public. And then one of my brilliant colleagues said, yeah, art making is always a political act. That is why, and I thought, is there another way to give us freedom as artists not to be saving the world? Mm. We three, for whatever reason, want to be out there in the conversation, but we want it to be what I call poetry. Mm-hmm. That's how I think of it. So, is Shakespeare an activist? Now, it's a big jump, I'm sorry, I don't want to sound pompous, but plays write about the most amazing things on every level of human experience, not the least of which is power and negotiating power and so on, and truth and politics and so on. But is he an activist? Hmm. We can use him, you might say, for activism. Hmm.
Taylor, is he an activist? Are you?
Well, I mean, I think of art as a seditious act. So I think that it is trying to get you sometimes to rebel against a government or an institution, a social dictate, but often against an obstinate sense of self. Mm-hmm. So in that frame, I would say yes, because you tend to not watch or listen to a Shakespeare play without feeling like you want to change, you want to move. So yeah, it's a seditious act.
What about you, Nigel?
Yes, I do consider myself an artist and an activist. And I think it comes out of, I mean, the three of us all work in live performance. The audience is present with us. When we introduce a metaphor, they are responsive, whether that's with their silence or with their laughter. And that ability to ask an audience to bring themselves to a question or bring themselves to a piece of poetry is a part of the activist tradition. You know, I am asking you to wrestle with me in this moment. And I think that, yeah, I've had the pleasure of working with both of these men, and what I've seen in both of their processes is an intense desire to be truthful to the impulses that they are having, and then to present them in such a way that the audience is wrestling with them directly. Now, that's direct action. That's to put something in front of someone and say, wrestle with it with me. I think that what might make me and some of my colleagues uncomfortable about this word activist is that it assumes that we're out there attempting to push people in a direction. Mm. No, we present the question. You wrestle with it how you want to wrestle with it.
You're not necessarily concerned, at least in the performance, with the answer. It's getting the question going.
Sure. I mean, I think about a particular piece. I began my artistic directorship at the Flea with a piece called Take Care. The piece was participatory. Yeah. Audience members could choose their level of participation. They could be right in the performance. They could be observing. One participant got a prompt asking them to choose each person of color in the room and ask them to join them in a room and then walk away. As it was going on, at different performances, some audience members got up and said, no, stop this. Some performances, nothing happened. I set up the opportunity. Wow. That's the art. Hmm.
Taylor, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the way you use the audience in your work. Those who were here Saturday night saw you enact White Flight, and there have been others that you've done, internment camps and other of your productions. How do you see the audience and their role in the performance that you're creating?
Well, in the 20th century, theater became a thing where people would sit and watch. And that's not really our tradition. That's not totally what we come from. oftentimes they'll say, well, you don't make traditional plays. And I say, no, I make tradition. That what you saw on Saturday was traditional. Yeah. That was Greek. You
know, right.
There's the Greeks wore masks. I'm wearing some kind of a mask that is exposing something about myself. They even had high heel shoes on. They right. would perform in these giant sandals that were platforms. You know, I got those too. They had arm extensions. I got big things on my costume that take me. So, you know, they dealt with heightened language and poetry, and especially in the Seder plays, interaction. So I feel like what I'm doing is really just kind of traditional. So long way to answer your question, that the audience is everything to me. I rely on them to get me to journey's end.
You know, it's probably worth speaking or coming out, because I feel like I am the person that I am because of the socialization that went on in the modern dance world that I came into. My inclination is to do church, not about Jesus Christ, but there is something always that I'm trying to, you know, break out and, can you hear me? You know, can you hear me? And, okay, oh, he's a demagogue. No, it's true.
Yeah.
When the younger man was in your face,
uh-huh.
and he had something that he was trying, and the problem was that I was not in a church. And people told me, you know, this is a problem, you know, because it's about you. And I'm thinking, no, it's call. I call out, and they call back.
Uh-huh.
And then, okay, in the models that I had that were considered the really great ones, there was Mr. Ailey, of course. If you know modern dance, you know Revelations, which was a wonderful portrait of a kind of ideal of the Black American experience through religion. Work me, Lord. I've been buked. I've been scorned. But then the one that my generation, latched onto was Merce Cunningham. Mm-hmm. Now, talk about cool artists. Mm-hmm. This is not, he's not doing church, you know? As a matter of fact, it's completely decentered. There's no theme, variation, development, resolution. No, that was anathema. That was death. That was the oppression of German Romanticism,
mm-hmm.
that we expected theme and variation and the kind of the orgasm, and then mm-hmm. we come down. So now look, this person in this body with this tradition is coming in and getting educated how to be a good artist. Mm-hmm. You got to stay out of their lap. You got to respect their intellect. Marcel Duchamp was of the opinion that art is primarily an intellectual activity. Primarily an intellectual activity. Comes in through the eyes. Now, and I took an extension. He says, and if it's really good, it will go to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's really good, and this is where I add, if it's really good, then it will go to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Don't forget the groin.
Don't forget the groin. Yeah. Well, as a black body, a black male body,
can we?
If you don't remember the groin, somebody will.
Yeah,
you understand?
And
you're made into a seducer. I take responsibility. How to get over in the culture?
Mm-hmm.
Take that shirt off and offer unlimited access to pleasure,
mm-hmm.
right? So now who is it, the person that wants to be on stage and preach, be on stage and connect to a community? That person was thwarted, and that person was lonely. This is sort of a disclaimer about this idea. Now we want to be activists, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we shall not be moved. Yeah. We shall not be moved. Sound like the black church? Mm. So I'm all around this issue, being in their lap, and what is a call and response, as I understand, the Greeks and the black church had a lot in common.
Mm-hmm.
So
I hear that desire to not be responsible to save the world, you know,
mm-hmm.
and to just be able to have poetry. Isn't that enough? And...
Do you think it is?
I long for it sometimes. I think it would be really nice to just be able to not have to do so much.
Haven't you said that you didn't want to be an activist at first? You wanted to be an artist, and then you found those things sort of converging at some point?
Well, I was an activist, and I my I had this experience where I locked my neck down to a cattle guard in order to stop a nuclear test, and I almost got killed as a result. And I realized that I wasn't changing anyone's opinion or viewpoint or action, behavior. Other people, I think, have the ability to change people that way, but it wasn't happening the way that I was doing it. And so I decided to do it in my to be an artist. And I found that by making art and living the life I want to live and acknowledging the world that is, but manifesting the world that I want through the art, not just presenting ideas, but actually building a community that is making it with me, and that has done more good than any of the actual direct action that I participated in when I was younger.
Mm-hmm. Nigel, I wonder that idea of building a community, how important that is to you. You grew up in a Pentecostal church, the Colston Street Church of God, right?
Oh, yes, you're taking me back.
And you've called church theatrical, so I'm hearing, I'm wondering, you talked about that communal energy that you got from church.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I grew up drinking that water, and I loved it. I mean, I was in church for 3 hours, 4 hours on a Sunday. We would go, it was Sunday school, we'd eat, we'd learn things, we'd act them out. We'd go upstairs to the big folks' church, and they would be shouting and catching the spirit, and we would hear the sermons, and me and my cousins, we would ask if we could join the choir on stage and just try to sing along as best we could. And then we would go home and play church in my grandmother's front yard.
Wow.
That is how moving it was. It was that it was filled up. And as a as an adult, I've looked back and I'm like, oh, that was our release. My little town was still extremely self-segregated when I grew up. And so the people around me, the other black folks, were using this one day to say, there's something that could promise us a better vision of ourselves, and here we are. We can act it out and bring that spirit in the room with us, and we can affirm each other, and we can affirm our humanness, and we can affirm the divinity that lives in each one of us. And that is an incredible, incredible gift that I received. And now in my work, I think about the fact that every choice we make, that we intentionally make, has the potential to be a creative choice. I'm lucky that I do that professionally. And what I hope to do in creating these church spaces, these communal spaces, is to remind my participants, remind my audiences that we are a bunch of creative choice makers day to day, and that those choices we make have an effect on us and the people around us.
It's Nigel Smith, who is artistic director of the Flea Theater in New York City. Taylor Mack is currently performing selections from a 24-decade history of popular music around the country. And Bill T. Jones is artistic director and co-founder of Bill T. Jones Arnie Zane Company. They were with us last night at Kingsbury Hall. It was part of the David P. Gardner Lecture in the Humanities and Fine Arts, organized by the College of Fine Arts at the University of Utah. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today on the program, we're broadcasting our conversation from last night with the legendary choreographer and dancer Bill T. Jones. We were also joined by the playwright and performer Taylor Mack and the director Nigel Smith. This was at Kingsbury Hall last night. It was a conversation about what it will mean to make art in this transitional moment in American culture. Yeah. Who is the community? I know that, Taylor Mack, one of the things you've talked about with your musical series was trying to recreate the experience you had when you were, I think, 14 or 15 years old, going to San Francisco and seeing for the first time.
The first out homosexual I ever saw, it was thousands of them all at the same time.
First time.
Yeah.
You came from Stockton, California. You went and you saw this, and you were trying to recreate that experience, and you've talked about how part of it was you were seeing the community, and this was during the AIDS crisis, so you had this community falling apart yet rebuilding.
Right.
Would you talk about that?
Well, the community was building itself because it was being torn apart.
Right.
And that was my first exposure to queer agency, queer history, queer pride. And to see it en masse like that as a result of it being torn apart, I find that to be an extraordinary dichotomy and something that is true of many communities throughout our history. So we wanted to make a show about that, that was in some ways a metaphorical mining of that experience. So that's what we did.
Yeah.
I think you've all talked at one point or another of creating a community with the work that you do. And I guess the question is, who gets to be in the community? How do you draw others who may not necessarily be inclined to come to a theater?
Right. Yeah, I mean, my big thing is everybody is invited. But that does not mean you soften for them. It doesn't mean that you play by their rules. I mean, one thing, I talk about this thing of, you know, I went to your church, I went to your school, I went to your learning facility, and I think that's true. I was raised in a conservative church. I was raised in a conservative government and a conservative world, because no matter how liberal you might think it is, it's a lot more conservative than my world, you know? So I've been in your world, but have you ever been to a gay bar before? You know, so that's, have you ever been to my church? And so we set up the world that we want, and we invite everybody's welcome. But just because we say the rules are different doesn't mean there aren't rules. And there are rules, and you don't get to lead the story at our church.
Yeah. I also think that, you know, both of these artists, Taylor and Bill, have this ability to seduce you into the room. An important part of our role as artists in a nation that has so many points of view about the arts and where do I access media and what kind of culture do I want to go to? Mm-hmm. You know, this project, The 21st Decade History, is about popular music. Who will sit in the room and say, oh, I'd hate popular music. I don't want to see a concert of popular music. People are like, yes, I want to go to a popular music concert. And they come and they show up, and then you begin to undo that. You know, who doesn't want to go see gorgeous dancers dancing gorgeous dance, mm-hmm. you know, or go to a Broadway musical and have a wonderful Broadway musical that's been, like, touted by the New York Times, and then come in there and be broken apart? Mm. You know, that's the gift. I wish I could do more of that, seducing.
Was it George Wolfe who said, you've got to take them to the party before you throw them to the wolves?
He said that, yes. It's tattooed on my forehead.
It took us a while to understand you have to take them to the party.
Really?
Because, no, I'm telling you, you cannot overestimate the premium that was placed on a cool distance. I came into the scene at the height of minimalism. And it, like I say, this idea that art is primarily an intellectual activity, and it's a little suspect when it is obviously there to please, because that's what they do down the road. That's Broadway. So I know what George is saying, but that was not, it was like hell to be allowed to take somebody to a party, you know? That was, now people are free to do it, but for a while we were kind of shackled. It was difficult to loosen up enough to take them to a party.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Lucinda Child says that pop art was the apocalypse, and minimalism is, and minimal movement was an expression of new birth, you know, movement of new birth, you know, and so I think now we're kind of maybe a little bit in a time of the terrible twos, you know, where it's about maximalism,
yes.
You know, we're going to throw it all out there.
Right.
You know.
I wanted to get your sense, all of you, about how you're seeing this moment we're in right now, however you sort of think about that. I mean, Bill T. Jones, you've called it kind of a transitional moment right now. A lot of anxiety about Donald Trump.
Speaking of the terrible twos.
A lot of, obviously, racial conflict, hand-wringing about what liberals may have missed during the election, whether the working class got neglected in all of this.
The white working class.
Right.
They go together.
Right.
Right.
So how are you seeing the moment? So mm-hmm. how are you thinking about this moment?
In my best moments, I'm seeing it as an opportunity. an opportunity to really rethink the mechanism in me. And I think I can do it. I think I can understand. In this afternoon's discussion with the dance students, we talked about empathy, and that I'm doing an address at the JCC in San Francisco in a couple of days, and it's going to be about this notion of empathy. I used the word today with the students. I said I despise some of the things that they represent, and I've got to control that. It's not an era where we fair-minded people run free with despising anyone. Trump is easy on one level. He's easy to despise, but I think we miss the point. Opportunity.
There's this moment in here, Taylor Mack, your play. Mm-hmm. Paige is the mother in this family. And her husband, Arthur, has been brutal and angry. He suffered a stroke. Now she cares for him, and she's at times cruel.
I would reframe that. I don't think she's cruel. I think she's...
You don't see her as vengeful. You see her as...
Yeah, she never talks about getting vengeance in the play. She never once mentions vengeance. Yeah. She's talking about breaking her family into a new kind of liberation.
Yeah.
So the thing she does to him is she dresses him up as in drag clown clothes. He's had the stroke and he can't really do anything about it, but she's like, hey, we're going to go to this new world where dad gets to be a drag clown, you know?
Yeah.
And so you can describe that as cruel. That might be your perspective. But from her perspective, it is about liberating the family. And
here's the thing that I want. Isaac, her son, who has just returned from the war as the play begins, is feeling a sense of empathy for his father.
Mm-hmm.
Paige says this, to have empathy for a man who hoards patriarchal privilege, that's bolstering his dominion.
She speaks in very, like, she's always trying to be kind of fancy in the way she talks, so that's why she speaks that way.
But I wonder, but to that sentiment, that idea that, I mean, how much empathy can you have, should you have, for people whose ideas you do despise? When do you hold the line? It seems like Paige is like, we are not shoring up these mm-hmm. ideas. Mm-hmm. You can't give empathy to that kind of idea.
Well, my feeling is you can't. The capitalism is you have to continually forgive the oppressor but vilify the outsider, and that's how it works. In order for capitalism to work, you have to dream that you will be the oppressor one day, and so you have to forgive the oppressor. And so I'm at a point in my life and my art where I don't want to have to forgive the oppressor anymore unless they're willing to change. So,
will you punish them?
I think punishment and forgiveness aren't... you don't have to do one in order to not do the other.
So you will not forgive them, but what will you do?
I mean, I think you have to hold them accountable, but I think you don't say, oh, the South, they were just courageous people who were trying to uphold their way of life. Mm-hmm. You don't say that kind of thing anymore. Mm-hmm. You say, no, they were horrible. Mm-hmm. And you hold them accountable.
And just stay here a moment in this because this is well spoken, but now I can critique them. I can write any. I know what your paper you read. I read the New York Times, and does anyone read Charles Blow?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That man is angry.
Yeah,
he is angry. He was the first person I read who used the term "count me in on the loyal opposition."
Yeah,
and he uses the most. He called Trump a troglodyte the other day. I mean, okay, my point is that we're going to fight you. We're going to fight you. The fact is now they have the upper hand. I'm sorry about the binary. They have the upper hand.
Uh-huh.
Now, I think that they are capable of death camps. I think they are.
Uh-huh.
I think that they are capable of horrible things for women. I think that's my paranoia. So I'm going to Well, I'm the one that said it, I'm the one that brought up empathy. So what do you mean, Bill? You're going to understand how, from their point of view, why they are the way they are, and then you're going to find some way to hold their hands down so they can't hurt them, other people, and there will be laws that will punish or control this. Now, that is the part that scares me right now. Mm-hmm. I also believe in rule of law.
Yeah.
But who is making the rules of law? How does that work? You say forgiveness, there comes a struggle. We need to all be as subtle as the best Supreme Court justice, as magnanimous and brilliant as Mr. Obama. Is that how we roll? What are you willing to do? What are you willing to do to protect the right to do what you do, what I do, art on stage, this middle class privilege? Mm-hmm. What are you willing to do? I don't know the answer, but I'm saying that's where I get stuck in my, I'm looking, trying to practice. And is it we give empathy or we practice empathy?
Yeah.
And is empathy a one-way trip? Is it?
Yeah, it's one way.
It's one way. Yeah.
It's one way.
Yeah. Sounds kind of Christian, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
I turn the other cheek. I turn the other cheek if you slap me. Is that what we're talking about? Empathy is?
Empathy is that ability to, even if you've not been through that situation with someone, to say, I understand.
Mm.
I am there with you. And sometimes I don't.
Or sympathy?
No, that's sympathy is when I've also experienced that, and therefore I understand. Empathy is, I can put myself in your shoes.
I hear you.
Yeah. And where does it stop? So then I hear you, but you're not going to do what you're doing.
We have to make the world in our image. I mean, isn't that what we set out to do when we make a show, when we make a piece of performance?
Hmm.
Is attempt to create a world that reflects some kind of image that we want to put forward. I mean, this is what's in my arsenal. This is making a thing. And hopefully that thing starts to build up a little. We're talking about it now. I hope I can say this. You know, like, how do we dream the culture forward? How do we look and imagine a vision for our future?
And it's along these lines, Nigel, that I feel that what we've been doing a lot in the art that I've been seeing is, and certainly on social media, is commenting on the world that is. And a certain amount of that is important, and I am so eager to start getting away from that. You know, I don't want to have to comment on it anymore.
I mean, hopefully in the work, we're practicing ways of existing outside of the work.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is that what it's about?
Well, this is why I know, this is why I choose participation.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons why I enjoy working with both of these men, is that in that participation, you have choice and you have decision making, and then you go away and you practice something.
So so art is modeling behavior for life?
Modeling? Not modeling,
no.
Making.
No.
Making. The way that we behave on the stage with our community of band members and collaborators, that's how we behave backstage. You know, it was slightly less performative,
right?
Obviously,
right.
But slightly. But you know,
right?
Yeah, it's not modeling life; it's practicing life.
Right. Yeah.
It is living.
Yes.
It is the thing, and we set up prompts, we set up situations, and we try to live through those situations.
And that's true for the audience too. I mean, that's one of the great uses of theater, is that it gives you an opportunity to practice your emotions, so that when you, you know, if George W. Bush had seen a play about how a war destroys everything, maybe he would have responded better. You know,
I think I might be a victim of humanizing my opponents too much.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming that there's only one explanation. I don't know the explanation why people behave oftentimes in an atrocious manner and against sometimes ultimately their own self-interest. I mean, global warming is real. Your children that you love, you are going to, your children and grandchildren, don't you know? Or is there this thing that always often comes up, but I don't like it. Is there such a thing as evil?
Nigel.
I want to say this. I think that we live in an evil culture.
Because
I do believe that there is evil. Mm-hmm. And I believe that what is evil about the culture we live in is that it reminds us that we do not have to be responsible to or respond to history. What do I mean by this? We don't have to deal with the fact that there is nuclear waste buried. It's buried, out of mind, out of sight, out of mind. Mm. We're not talking about that. We're not telling stories about that. We do not have to deal with the fact that we have a nation that was built on the backs of slaves and that was also stolen from peoples who were already here. Never had a Truth and Reconciliation Committee in our country. We don't have national moments of response and reaction or even culturally significant days where we practice rituals that remind us. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I have such a huge affinity for my Jewish brothers and sisters. I go and I experience Passover with them, and I have to relive what it meant to be an oppressed person. Imagine if we had culture that did that. So what is evil to me is that the culture keeps saying, forget the past, look forward, get the new dress. Get the next thing.
Uh-huh. Mm. So when Mr. Obama came in and he did not prosecute everybody from Karl Rove to Dick Cheney,
right?
That was that more than a tactical mistake? That was some sort of maybe even complicit with evil?
Yes. What is unearned forgiveness? Am I supposed to be magnanimous? And just forgive you for because you are human and you have faults?
Well, isn't that we went back with empathy is a one-way street.
Right. So how do we build society with one-way streets? I want to be in dialogue with my neighbors.
That was Nigel Smith, artistic director of the Flea Theater in New York City, talking with us last night at Kingsbury Hall, part of the David P. Gardner Lecture in the Humanities and Fine Arts. We are also joined by Taylor Mack, who is currently performing selections from a 24-decade history of popular music around the country. And also with us was Bill T. Jones, artistic director and co-founder of Bill T. Jones' Arnie Zane Company. We'll take another quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation with the artists and performers Bill T. Jones, Taylor Mack, and Nigel Smith, recorded last night at Kingsbury Hall.
I'm really moved by what you two are saying about dreaming forward the future. Is that what
you're saying? It's a Freud phrase, dream the culture forward.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, because I felt that the best that I can do is to make something that has a kind of vibrancy and truth, and it has equal parts, dark and light in it, and that it does not owe me anything other than my attention. And it's just like I didn't ask to be born, and I don't know how I'm going to die. Now that, look hard at that truth, and now you are the priest, or whatever you want to call it, you bring people together to look at that truth and say, and still we can love, still we can be together. Now, can you make a revolution with that? I don't think so. I am not thinking about revolution now. I am thinking, I don't know what I would call it.
Revolution is...
it's a problem word.
It's a problem word. It implies immediacy. And as we have learned, nothing happens immediately that lasts for long. You know, so I don't buy the whole. That's why I didn't support Bernie. I was like, I can't get on board with that word. I can't get on board with it. I want, you know, you have to work every day. You have to be a workhorse. You have to Bayard Rustin creating the freedom rides decades before Rosa Parks. Decades before, you have to work every single freaking day. You know, and it's
so then you don't believe in revolution. You believe in evolution.
I suppose I do, yeah.
I guess I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why I sounded so sad about that.
Well, because I sit over here, and I don't know if it's my youth, but I'm like, do I have to, like, I hear evolution, and I feel passivity. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not what you mean.
Go slow.
I know you really
go slow.
No,
I hear go slow. I'm tired of going slow.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But I do know that my dad called me, you know, several times over the last year and a half, because my dad still lives in North Carolina and, of course, is working along people with very different political views. And he doesn't know. He didn't know. He's calling me for counsel, you know, and I don't know.
Well, how to talk to these people?
Yeah. How to live and work at a moment where it was so divisive.
Yeah.
And so how do we evolve in that? What are we asking?
Well, wait, what did you say to him? What kind of advice could you offer?
I said, I don't know.
Yeah.
Why?
What I did for my mom, because my mom works for Walmart, I bought her a Hillary pin, and she wore it. And it created conversation in her checkout line.
Mm-hmm. But I think that the go slow thing and evolution are... you know, you decide how quickly you change. You know what I mean? I know that there's conditioning and unconditioning, and that takes time and all that stuff. But you decide: am I going to behave this way right now or not? And that's where immediacy can happen. That's where it doesn't have to go slow. So you don't have to say it gets better, and then. As a way of saying, go slow, don't worry, we don't actually have to do anything right now, do it when you're an adult. You can actually say, you know what, let's create a Pink Panther organization that follows little kids around their elementary schools and stops bullies from beating them up. Mm-hmm. Like, you can actually create the thing that solves the problem. And that is not going slow, but that is also participating in every day moving forward. Yeah.
And that's what I'm hearing right now about this moment, is that what I thought I heard the president say was, okay, we took a royal shellacking. We did. We were all kind of smug, and we thought it's going to go one way. It went another way. I'm not quite sure yet why it went the way it went. But he said, now what we have to do is you got to go disseminate into the countryside. Go to those communities. Participate on the school board. Participate in local elections. Mm-hmm. Do the grassroots. And because I was saying, oh no, man, in 2 years, we got to get these suckers out of there. No, it's not going to, no, 2 years is not going to do it. Mm-hmm. 4 years. 4 years, we got to get them out of there. Well, can you imagine what if they get 8 years?
Oh, they're going
right.
to get it.
I mean,
they're going to get it.
But can we go slow and actually be right. doing the work and building this future mm-hmm. With hard work? It's very wise what you say. Mm-hmm. That's the only way, and it isn't my nature. Mm-hmm. I was a sprinter in high school, not long distance runner. and I'm a victim of instant gratification. As many gay men of my generation were.
Not just your generation.
Well, that's another one, right? Yeah, right. But you know, my point is that what we're talking about? Put your head down, do the work. And even though you're angry as hell right now and you feel cheated and all, work in the system.
We don't have time to move slow when it comes to climate change. And this is what I think about, this is news culture, news creating culture, but I think about the news cameras turning the nation's attention on really horrific acts during the civil rights movement in the South. Like, that was able to change a Congress that was a do-nothing Congress around civil rights because they had an image that mm-hmm. one could latch onto. How do we, as creators of culture, make something like climate change more immediate? I mean, I tried a couple of years ago. I failed. That mm-hmm. worked. Mm-hmm. Didn't work.
With a performance piece?
It was a performance piece.
Yeah.
It's hard
I don't
to
want to
do,
talk about it. It's really hard.
issue-driven work.
It's issue.
Agit prop.
Right.
Is that what that is what agit prop
it is,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
That's why activists are so good. I mean, if we'd sat around and made AIDS plays, we wouldn't have the drugs right now,
right?
Like, if that's all we did, right? So mm-hmm. the activists need to do their job, and we do our job. That's why, in some ways, I feel like I'm with you. I mean, art as activism cannot happen because the nature of it is to consider, and activism is to move. Mm. And art is we're here to bring in doubt, and activism needs to eliminate doubt, you know, in order to be effective. So,
say that again.
I think someone screams at Bill Clinton about, I forget his name, but he screams at Bill Clinton about AIDS at a press conference, and he's the only one, and the whole country shames him for screaming, but the ACT UP community is like, yes, work! You know, and they have zero doubt that he was wrong in what he did. And that is extraordinary, because then Bill Clinton brings it up in the presidential debate when he wasn't going to bring it up before. So the activism worked because they had zero doubt that this was wrong. If they went, well, let's be polite, let's consider the feelings of Bill Clinton, let's consider that the pressure he's under, let's consider that he's on our side. No, it doesn't work. So you have to just go, you know, and that's why activism is so good and direct action is so wonderful. But meanwhile, artists have to bring in doubt.
See, I don't see a difference.
Yes,
I see that moment of activism as a great piece of performance art. There's an intentionality behind it. There's a performer, and there's a receiver.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
And we have a message. We have a message.
Yeah, sometimes you have a message in your art. Mm-hmm. Not always.
Well, no, this particular corner of our artistic enterprise, and we're asked tonight to speak as activists, it seems that, I don't know, I was taught once again, this message is to, the work becomes one and two-dimensional. And because you're so busy trying to convince us of something, maybe there is a time and a place, and let's pray there's genius, because the genius is in the form,
right,
in the execution, right? Mm-hmm. Who really wants, climate change is real. And those Hollywood movies are pretty scary. The Day After, remember that one 3 years ago?
Right.
They always, they were redeemed, unfortunately, the Hollywood movies. They don't leave you out there. But is that what we're talking about? That there is a time and a place for people making work to actually take a stand around something. I've done it. I didn't think I was doing it in two large works, Uncle Tom's Cabin and Still Here. I was roundly criticized from an artistic establishment, but obviously some people were getting it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I suffered for it, but that's one thing you have to learn as an artist, you know, who says it's supposed to feel, you're supposed to feel good doing it.
But still here...
Yeah, I'm into that.
You traveled around the country talking to people, asking them questions that helped inform that piece.
Yes. People who had been dealing with a life-threatening illness.
A life-threatening illness, right. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering I'm wondering if you think that ought to be a technique in some way in terms of dealing with a side you don't understand, a perspective that you don't understand. If there is a way for artists, should you go out again and travel and talk and find
out?
Well,
I think it's become practice now. There are whole communities of artists who are actually, quote, embedded in communities around issues like immigration, around, you know, the younger generations than I am. I don't know, this might be shocking, if my heart is broad enough anymore.
Huh.
And I think
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, I think everyone should understand, those people in the room, you know, the end of, never mind, let's not go there. A novel about the Paul Bowles novel. We've gone through this incredible character study, and these two people have been lost in the desert in Morocco. They went on a vacation and
Sheltering Sky.
And there's a speech at the end where I once thought that moon, the moon coming up and down, there was unlimited number, but there is not an unlimited number. And I think that the thing that makes one truly a robust young activist artist is there's a expiration date on it. And therefore, you've got to make sure that you build your coalition when the energy is there, because there's things like this, literally physical energy. Mm-hmm. There are things like my body aches, or I am tired, and I don't. And I say it took a lot of generosity at that time, a lot of ego as well, to be out there. I'm the one to do this. I'm the one to do this. Come one, come all. I think it has to be done, but I think that my concerns have actually become more focused. So this activism. You got to, the young should be encouraged go now, go do it now. Hopefully there are enough wise elders to say, try this, try this, try this, you know?
Bill T. Jones, you said this once, can art make a difference? I don't dare make that assumption, but that is my faith.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? Yeah, we have to go to religious language.
I've seen it make a difference, but I don't know the long haul. Mm-hmm. I don't know what difference really means when people say that, you know, define difference. But but I have seen lives changed as a result of the work that I make being a catalyst. Not necessarily being the thing that really changes them, but being the little door opening that they needed.
That's Taylor Mack, who's currently performing selections from a 24-decade history of popular music around the country. He joined us last night along with Nigel Smith, artistic director of the Flea Theater in New York City, and, of course, Bill T. Jones, artistic director and co-founder of Bill T. Jones' Arnie Zane Company. Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Kevin Myrie, Joe Killian, and Brian Jirena at Kingsbury Hall. Thanks also to Dean Raymond Timus Jones and Marina Gomberg at the University of Utah's College of Fine Arts, and to Brooke Horsch, executive director of the university's Utah Presents. Our intern is David Boyle. The show was mixed by KUER's engineer, Lewis Downey. Radio West is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.